The PGA Tour has confirmed that Lee Elder has died at age 87. Elder, who broke the color barrier at the Masters in 1975, was a four-time winner on the PGA Tour. He was an honorary starter at the Masters for the first time in 2021. Lee Elder won four times on the PGA Tour, but it was his fight against racism and bigotry that will be remembered far more than his play. He was a champion of racial justice and a trailblazer at Augusta National when he became the first black man to participate in the Masters in 1975. Welcome to Golf Today on a sad day. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. It's a tough Monday for many of us who love this game and who loved Lee Elder. What's top of mind to you?
Well, it's a sad day in this game, Damon, because Lee Elder represented the most rare thing in sports, which is someone who becomes iconic for the impact he made outside the ropes rather than on the field of play. And Lee Elder had a terrific record as a player, but his legacy will go far beyond that. And, you know, there's an old Irish saying that Lee Elder will stand taller in his grave than many of his contemporaries did in life.
Mm. It's a wonderful sentiment. I got to meet Lee Elder for the first time in 2008. I did a profile on him for Sports Illustrated magazine, and he carried so much dignity and grace despite the odds that he faced as a younger man and even as someone as an adult in his prime trying to compete on the highest levels of this game and had to change his clothes in the parking lot and received death threats in the midst of winning a PGA Tour event in 1974 and never seemed to carry that bitterness and anger even late in life. He was really touched by some of the honors he received, the USGA Bob Jones Distinguished Service Award, of course, in 2021, being an honorary starter alongside Jack and Gary. He could have carried a lot of pain in his heart, but when I was with him, he always seemed to be someone who seemed to be in great peace.
And he lived by the motto, stay the course. That was his favorite saying, and it was embroidered on the hats of some of his friends at Augusta this year. And it's an appropriate one for Lee Elder in a way, because you talked about changing the clothes in the parking lot. That happened at a golf club in Pensacola in his rookie year in 1968. It was the very same golf course where Lee Elder won the Monsanto Open in 1974 to make his way into the Masters. And here's a man who leaves a legacy that is very impactful in this game, but he did it with dignity and class the whole way throughout his career.
And the first man to compete in the Masters as an African-American in 1975, and speaking of which, we have this statement from the chairman of Augusta National, Fred Ridley. We are deeply saddened to learn of the passing of Lee Elder, a friend of Augusta National and a true pioneer in the game of golf. Lee was an inspiration to so many young men and women of color, not only through his play, but also through his commitment to education and community. Lee will always be a part of the history of the Masters Tournament. His presence will be sorely missed, but his legacy will continue to be celebrated. Our thoughts and prayers are with Sharon and the entire Elder family. Lee Elder was a trailblazer who overcame long odds on the golf course and for much of his life, poor, orphaned, segregated. Rich Lerner has more.
Lee Elder was equipped to deal with the difficulties facing a black man in a predominantly white and for too long segregated sport, in part because he was born into a life of hardship. In 1934, Depression-era Dallas, Texas, one of 10 children. When he was 9, his father was killed in Germany in World War II. His mother died shortly after. At 12, Elder found a home with an aunt in Los Angeles. Young Lee tagged along with an older brother who had begun to caddy at a local course to support the family. Back then, the caddy yards were fertile grounds for future players, and Elder eventually discovered he too could make a buck in money matches, those hard-scrabble hustles forging a generation of self-taught, self-reliant players. But his was not a solo journey. He met Joe Louis, the boxing giant who loved golf. Louis saw the promise in Elder and introduced him to one of the finest African-American players of his time, Ted Rhodes. Rhodes helped Elder polish his game. Elder served his country, and following a stint in the Army, he competed in the United Golf Association, a circuit for black golfers who, because of the Caucasian-only clause, were not allowed to play on the PGA Tour until 1962. Elder won plenty, and by 1967, he had scraped together enough money to go to qualifying school and eventually earn his card. Like Charlie Sifford, Jim Dent, and Pete Brown, Elder endured hate mail, unruly fans, and threatening phone calls in the middle of the night while on the road. On the course, it was not uncommon to have his golf ball thrown in a bush or out of bounds. Elder pressed on. In 1974 in Pensacola, he won his first PGA Tour title, and with it, national fame and ultimately an invitation to the Masters, which had never had a black man compete. Elder said he was scared to death, having to deal with ugly letters in the run-up to that 1975 Masters. By the time he arrived in Augusta, he recalls that he just didn't want to embarrass himself. Although he missed the cut, he comported himself with dignity. He was better than the game had been to him. Elder won a total of four times on the PGA Tour and another eight on the PGA Tour Champions. In 1979, he also became the first African-American to represent the United States in the Ryder Cup. Breaking barriers wasn't Elder's goal in life as much as making a living, but he did both. After Tiger Woods won the 1997 Masters, he said of Elder that it was because of people like him that I was able to turn pro to get this opportunity. In 2021, Elder joined Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player on the first tee at Augusta National as an honorary starter. While Elder never won majors as they did, he did win something perhaps even more noble, respect and admiration for fighting a battle that would have defeated a lesser man.
And we are joined now by Jaime Diaz on this Monday. Jaime, what should our viewers know about the life and legacy of Lee Elder?
Well, Rich told it so beautifully in that feature. But, you know, to me, I think his legacy will grow as the perspective on the accomplishment is better understood. Because, you know, the history of black golf in this country has been one of hardships and obstacles until very recently. And Lee Elder was part of that. He was actually part of the latter part of it. But, you know, basically it was about, you know, racism, obviously, lack of money, you know, lack of competition, golf courses that where you didn't develop your game, lack of instruction, all these things. I mean, Lee Elder didn't play 18 holes in his life until he was 16 years old. He caddied before that. He was a cross-handed player when he started out. Very hard scrabble beginnings, and those things are hard to overcome. So anybody who breaks through and wins golf tournaments on the PGA Tour or even the PGA Tour champions who became a good player in that environment of black golf, to me, almost belongs in the Hall of Fame because of the relative accomplishment of it. Lee Elder played with Titanic Thompson. He had to, you know, just be so innovative in just surviving. And then when he got to the UGA, the United Golf Association, he won 18 out of 22 tournaments. He was a prodigy, but he made himself that and got to the PGA Tour and won four tournaments. Didn't get there until he was 33. And then won eight more on the PGA Tour champions. So, you know, Lee, to me, overcame, you know, he started lower in terms of the opportunities in golf and got himself to the same level as so many others that had such greater opportunities that I think that's going to be more appreciated as time goes along. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lee Elder ends up in the Hall of Fame.
Well, isn't it a bit of a sad commentary that Lee Elder lived for 87 years and he's not actually in the Hall of Fame at this point? And to me, I think that speaks to how laggardly this game is in acknowledging the kind of impact that people make off of the golf course. I mean, the Memorial Tournament has honoured almost 80 people since 1976. Lee Elder was not on that list either. And I think there's a certain overdue status here that needs to be redressed. I mean, Charlie Sifford got the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama, but that was a few months before he died at the age of 92. And how many of these guys have to actually die off before they're acknowledged for the accomplishments that they and impact that they had on this game?
Yeah, it's bittersweet in some ways that for a great honor of being an honorary starter at Augusta National that Lee Elder was not able to swing the golf club as Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player were. It was almost symbolic of a man who competed in his first Masters at the age of 40. And as Jaime said, you know, wasn't able to compete on the PGA Tour until he was 33. And yet he did carry so much grace and dignity. And Jaime, I'm curious, what were your interactions like with Lee, because when I was around him, he always just seemed to be smiling. And if he had some pain about how he was treated as a man in his 30s or 40s, in his 70s and 80s, he seemed to be a man at peace.
Yes, I think, you know, he was close to Charlie Sifford, but Charlie Sifford was a distant man in terms of the hardness that he had to develop to get through the environment he got through. Lee came a little later, and he didn't have that same, you know, sense of oppression that Charlie had to go through. He did have oppression, but I think he chose to deal with it in a different way, and it did. There was a light about him, despite everything, that always made him, you know, very joyful to be around. I wasn't around him a lot. I was fortunate to interview him this year at the Masters, and he still had it with him. And one of the things he talked about growing up was that, you know, when you're not really gifted with a sense of belonging because of the environment, your self-esteem can be lower, and you have to learn how to, you know, bring yourself up with a good attitude. And that was, I think, something that carried him through very nicely. He told one story that I remember about, and it was in my shot that Guy Yoakam did so beautifully in Golf Digest. He played in the 1966 U.S. Open with Johnny Miller, who was 19 years old, had no real pedigree. He'd won the U.S. Junior, but nobody really knew about him. And here's this 19-year-old kid, completely confident, thinking he's going to win. And Lee Elder, of course, feeling like, do I even belong here? And he realized that is so much of being a champion, and he tried to take on that attitude himself as he got older, but it was a hard thing to play catch up with.
Yeah, it's amazing he was able to overcome the odds as an orphan, his father, of course, dying in World War II, but ultimately Lee Elder became a four-time winner on the PGA Tour and much more, a trailblazer as well. We appreciate Jaime Diaz's thoughts. And speaking of the PGA Tour, this statement from the commissioner, Jay Monahan: it's remarkable to look back on Lee's life and career and realize the hardships he endured and the sacrifices he made to reach golf's highest level, to have the success he had while paving the way for others to dream big and achieve is a testament to the type of man he was and how much talent he possessed. The tour is profoundly grateful for the career of Lee Elder, and we extend our sincere sympathies to his family. And for more, we turn to Pete McDaniel, longtime golf writer and author. Pete, what are your emotions on this Monday?
Oh, Damon, it's a tough week. It's been a tough week for me personally. I lost a very dear friend and a golfing icon in Billy Gardenhite just barely over a week ago. And now Lee. It seems that all of our legends are long in the tooth and short in the step, and we're just losing them. So it's been very difficult. I, of course, was a good friend of Lee's. I can remember as a caddy at Biltmore Forest Country Club, some of the elder caddies talking about this phenom from Dallas and how he had played on the UGA and dominated the UGA and had played in the Skyview Invitational, or the Skyview Open at the time, a tournament on the Black Golf Tour in my hometown of Asheville, North Carolina. But it didn't really give me a sense of who he was as a person until I met him some years later. Lee had this light, like Jaime said. It was evident from his smile. He had this big smile, and he was indeed a joy to be around. Pretty articulate, too, for someone who had a limited education. And that was impressive. But he had lived life and knew a whole lot about the back roads of golf and the fact that he had made it to the big time, that he had played with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and Arnold Palmer and all these stars, guys who he emulated and really respected a lot. It was just a joy to see him be so joyful. Despite all of the challenges that he had faced, he was a gentleman. He was he had this personality that made you want to be around him and talk to him about history and his experiences on and off the golf course. We lost a great player, a legend in the Black golf community. But more than that, we lost a friend to golf. And I personally lost a good friend.
Pete, most golf fans out there will only remember and relate to Lee in the iconic trailblazer role. As a friend of his, what springs to mind when you think of the life and legacy of Lee Elder? What do people need to know about him that they don't know?
They need to know what a giving person he always was. you know, even before he made it on the PGA Tour, he was into philanthropy, always doing for others, people less fortunate than him, always willing to give a tip to anyone who sought one. He was a fierce competitor, but he, I think his legacy reaches far beyond, you know, the first African-American to play in the Masters, or the first Black honorary starter at Augusta National in the Masters. It reaches far beyond that. It is cemented in all of the lives that he positively touched. And that's what I think people should know. He had a foundation before it was even popular among golfers to have a foundation that benefited youth. And so he had this very giving spirit, and he had, there was a calmness about that Lee that was almost indescribable. I'll tell you what, if I had gone through some of the things that he had, I don't think I would have been quite as calm, but he seemed to be at peace with who he was. And that person was the one that I knew. And so I'd like to say condolences, sincere condolences to his wife, Sharon, and all of his family and friends, and of which he had very many.
Pete, I think about the legacy of Lee Elder, but also kind of the road that he traveled, and folks of his vintage, of his age, my parents' age as well. You know, my mom told me what a green book was before the movie came out. I know that the road that these trailblazers traveled was not easy. So my question to you is, did the game do right by him at the end?
Oh, God, Damon, that's a great question. I would say that it kind of validated who he was as a player, but not so much as what he meant to the game itself. In that respect, I don't know if anyone ever got the respect and the record they deserved. People like he and Charlie and you know, Ted Rhodes, and people like that who forged a way for, you know, African-Americans and other minorities, quite frankly, to play the game competitively at the highest level. I'm glad that before he closed his eyes for the final time, he did receive some recognition. I think the world now knows who Lee Elder was as a player, as a competitor, but the nuances of his life, the depth and quality of his life may never be known or appreciated.
Speaking of Lee as a player, he not only won four times on the PGA Tour, there were eight Champions Tour wins he also had. And if you, we talk about iconic seasons in this game. Go back to 1985, which was Lee's first full year on the Champions Tour. Peter Thomson won 11 times that year, but he was second three times to Lee Elder. Do you think Lee Elder actually gets the respect, or has ever gotten the respect as a player as opposed to the trailblazer?
I think so. I would definitely say so, especially among his peers. If you talk to anyone, you know, any one of his peers, I'll guarantee you they'll say what a great competitor he was and what a great player he was. Lee was not the longest hitter of the golf ball, but he had an understanding of the game, and he was a fierce competitor. As Jaime said, having started out as a hustler, you know, with Titanic Thompson. I don't think there was any shot that he couldn't play. He was self-taught, basically, and he had heart. I remember interviewing Jim Thorpe years ago for my book, Uneven Lies. And Jim was quoted in the book as saying if he ever got a chance to win, he was sure as heck going to take advantage of it. Something to that effect. He was a little bit more colorful than that. But that certainly was Lee Elder as well. And I think on the PGA Tour, certainly before the PGA Tour, the UGA, he was absolutely the most feared golfer on the circuit for about 5 or 6 years. He dominated it. So when he showed up, you knew you had to play excellent in order to beat him. And on the PGA Tour, he took that same competitiveness to the PGA Tour. He was likable, but he was also, I believe, respected as a great player and someone who could finish a tournament, which is a very difficult thing to do, as you all know.
Pete, I know your heart is heavy on this Monday. We really appreciate you spending a few minutes with us and sharing some thoughts on Lee Elder. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
More on the reaction to the passing of Lee Elder when we return. A life to celebrate, a legacy that will live on. In 1979, Lee Elder became the first black player to qualify for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. It was a team that also included Lee Trevino, Larry Nelson, Lanny Watkins, Hale Irwin, Tom Kite, Hubert Green, and Fuzzy Zeller. Elder won his opening match, and the U.S. would win 17-11. This from Ryder Cup USA. Today we are saddened by the loss of our teammate and friend, Mr. Lee Elder. A true trailblazer and gentleman, we honor Lee's memory and the lasting impact he made on the game. Some notable milestones in the life of Lee Elder, the first black player to compete in the Masters in 1975, a member of that 1979 U.S. Ryder Cup team, the first black player to qualify, spoke out against country clubs excluding blacks from having memberships in 1990, and the Lee Elder Scholarship Fund, created in 1974, offered to aid those seeking money for college. We welcome in Macy Russell now, co-founder of the Lee Elder Internship. Macy, thank you for joining us. I heard that when you found out that Lee Elder had passed away, you said you'd be honored to talk about Lee. Why is that?
He was just such a great man. He cared about others, probably more than he cared about himself. And when you get an opportunity to thank someone for a lifetime of commitment to others, and I couldn't pass it up.
AC, tell us about the Lee Elder internship and what the goal is.
Well, it's interesting. When I was talking to Lee at the Masters, I knew his health was failing at the time. And I asked him, what do you want to do? And we talked for a little bit, and we came up with the idea of an internship program that would create opportunities to introduce diverse students to the game of golf at the highest levels.
So what will it be like at the U.S. Open? What is this process going to look like for people that are seeking this internship and perhaps employment in the golf industry as a whole?
Well, we're really doing two things. One is we'll have 25 interns from around the country. We'll pay all their expenses to come in. That was something Lee was very adamant about. Most kids of color can't afford to fly across the country and stay in a hotel to intern. So we picked up the cost for all that along with their meals and transportation. And they'll spend a week with us learning everything about the game of golf, from the business side of golf, but also learning a little bit about how to be successful as a person of color in corporate America today. And the other thing that we'll be doing for the interns, we realize that this may be a competitive process, where we're providing the interns with an opportunity to opt in and provide us their resume, that then we would then gather all of those resumes and make them available to companies and businesses in the game of golf that are interested in looking for diverse talent.
Macy, you've got all of these kids who are, I guess, just starting out in life now. What do you want them to take when you point to the legacy of Lee Elder? What are the attributes he had that you want them to register as part of this process?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is resiliency. I think they need to understand that what Lee went through as a young man, as an adult playing golf and later in life, is just an example of what you need to learn in order to be successful. Life's not always going to, you know, be a bed of roses. There are going to be a lot of challenges. And the question is, well, what do you do with those challenges? And Lee was really excited about, and I hadn't even said it to him yet. We talked just a couple of days before Thanksgiving. And he was like, I'm going to meet with all these interns. I'm going to sit down. I want to talk to them. So I got some things I want to say to them. And I know it would be resiliency. I know it would be hate. It would be loving somebody over hating someone, that, you know, recognizing that there will be barriers in life, but you can get through those barriers If you just give it your best and whatever happens, happens. And I know he would encourage them to work as hard as possible and to do something that they enjoy so that work is not work.
Macy, I knew Lee for 13 years. Whenever I see him at golf tournaments, he was always smiling. I called him a sweetheart of a man. I will miss him. I got to see him at the U.S. Open just this past summer at Torrey Pines. What were your personal interactions like with Lee?
Wow, I've known Lee for over 30 years. We actually ran some golf tournaments together to benefit kids in the area of education. I think one thing I'll always remember about Lee is whenever you have a conversation with Lee, he would always end the conversation by saying, "No doubt about it." He was always positive. He was always upbeat. I can also remember a time when we were in Houston. It was a senior tour event, and we were in the elevator, and somebody walked in. And Lee immediately just smiled at the person and said, "Good morning." And I kind of sat back and said, "He's like this all the time. He's always nice to people. He has a very kind heart." And I think that's what I'll remember. I think the other point I would make is that he spent a lifetime helping others. And when it came to participating in charity events to help raise money for underserved populations and kids, he did it. I mean, other people would say I'm too busy. He was always there. And I don't know anyone who's met Lee Elder who hasn't walked away with a smile on their face and saying, "I got his autograph," or "I got a photograph with him." He just had that magnetism. He had a personal quality that I think he developed over the years, from being a young kid in Texas to making it onto the PGA Tour, that he learned a lot about life and he learned a lot about people. And he was willing to share that with others.
Macy, do you think that the game gets it and understands what Lee had to go through to become the man that he was, the person that he was, and that he is appreciated enough and understood enough the trials and tribulations that he faced?
I think the short answer to that is no, but it's not uncommon that we really don't understand our history. What the players did on the Negro Golf Tour, the Chitlin Circuit, whatever you want to call it, the United Golf Association Tour, was amazing in that what they did was they put together a golf tour to be able to compete. And that was not easy. When you think about the game of golf and you think about the percentage of minorities in golf clubs around the country, you will realize that this was a black man in the 1950s and 60s. Along with Charlie Sifford and others that wanted to play golf at country clubs in suburban white neighborhoods during a civil rights movement. I don't think people totally appreciate the courage that it took to take that stance. I mean, it was one thing, and it's not to underplay the civil rights movement, but it was one thing to be marching in the streets, and Lee was constantly in contact with Dr. Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy and others as they were playing golf in the South. But it was also about knocking on the door in the suburbs and looking for opportunities to play. And I don't think people know that story. There's a lot that went on back in those days that we hope at some point will be told with a little bit more detail than some of the, you know, what we hear about in terms of the highlights of it. But it was very, very difficult to start a Negro golf tour to run parallel to the PGA Tour in the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s.
How about today, Macy, as the Lee Elder internship prepares to take flight this June, are you encouraged by golf's embracing of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the name of someone like Lee Elder?
I am. When I had a discussion with Mike Wan, the CEO of the USGA, about the internship program, I could barely get the words out of my mouth before he says, "Yes, we should do it." And they willingly jumped on board to help us do it. I think where we are right now in golf is like, how do you create opportunities for people so that when their resumes land on the desk, somebody says, "Oh, they have the experience." There's a lot of talented people out there who don't get the experiences. And I think what we're trying to do with this internship program is bring awareness to that, but also to create experiences that allow diverse candidates to put their resumes on the table and say, "My resume is just as good as someone else." And I think the other thing we will do at the U.S. Open at the Country Club in June of 2020. We will have a celebration of the United Golf Association and the Lee Eld internship. And so I think it'll be even more special. But the other thing that we're doing is we're kind of appealing to people who are involved with the game of golf to ask them to think about what you can do individually to increase diversity in golf. It might be as simple as saying to someone, play basketball and golf, play football and golf, play soccer and golf, and we'll help you learn how to swing the club.
Well, Mesa, I can tell you that as we get closer and closer to the U.S. Open this summer, we'll be talking about the Lee Elder internship quite a bit. So thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your time on this Monday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
As we go to break, a little flashback from the springtime. I was able to spend some time with Lee Elder after his incredible honor on that Augusta Thursday of being an honorary starter alongside Jack and Gary.
This is evidence that Lee Elder's legacy in this game extends far beyond players. I mean, I know you were close friends with him, Damon. What's your favorite memory of Lee?
Just his smile, able to spend some time with him and laugh. And he always said, thank you. I'm trying to thank him for opening the doors. And he's saying, Damon, thank you for remembering me.
That is class.
Lee Elder, who played in the 1975 Masters, was the first African-American to do so, passed away on Sunday at the age of 87. Of course, back in April, joined Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player as honorary starters. Orphaned as a 10-year-old when his father was killed in World War II, his mother died shortly after. Life was one to be celebrated and remembered on this Monday, and the golf world continues to react, including the LPGA Tour, saying, "We are saddened to learn of the passing of Lee Elder. He was the definition of a trailblazer, and his impact on the game of golf will never be forgotten." And this from the DP World Tour on the passing of Lee Elder. "We are very saddened by the passing of Lee, a pioneer who leaves a lasting legacy in our game. Our thoughts and condolences are with his family and friends at this time." We welcome in a three-time PGA Tour winner in Cameron Champ on this Monday. Cameron, thank you for joining us. What's top of mind for you as we celebrate the life of Lee Elder?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously extremely sad. I mean, in the last few years, my family and including my father have become very close with Lee, and again, trying to make a change in our community in a very small percentage compared to what Lee has done in his lifetime. But, you know, he's done so much for myself, for the game of golf, for just the African-American community in general. He's, somebody, again, I had a family friend that texted me, Roland Martin, said, Lee is now an ancestor. He's somebody that might come around once in your lifetime, somebody who has the courage to do what nobody wanted to do back then in the 40s and 50s and 60s, try to become a golfer in that time frame, with the civil rights movements and dealing with that. I still think to this day, nobody can fully understand what Mr. Elder went through in that time to just play the game that he loved playing. So, for me, again, it's extremely sad, for him to, pass, but at the same time, we can remember everything that he's done in the game of golf and just in life in general.
Cameron, over the last couple of years, you've taken a very public stand against systemic racial injustice in this country. How much have you leaned on the example of Lee Elder when you were doing that and when you faced the reaction from a more hostile audience to that?
I mean, a lot. I mean, I think Lee and my grandfather, they both grew up in the same time frame. Obviously my grandfather went into the Air Force. Lee was trying to become a professional golfer, but just learning from their experiences and just kind of picking their brains, it's at the end of the day, you have to live with yourself and your values and always stick to those no matter what comes afterwards, especially if your values are real and they're truthful and there's facts to back them, then there's nothing that could ever make you think different. So I think with him, he's given me a stronger backbone as far as, you know, this is what's going on in our communities. This is what's going on in our world now. And, you know, for me, as I keep growing in my career, I'm going to do everything that I possibly can, you know, to help the next generation.
Cameron, it turns out that Thursday at Augusta was truly a once-in-a-lifetime moment. Lee Elder was on that first tee with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player, and you were out there as well. Your father was out there as well. I wasn't too far away from Jeff. What was that morning like for you to be a young PGA Tour star, seeing Lee Elder on that tee box on that Thursday?
Yeah, that was something special. I've even my first year, I didn't go to the first tee ceremony, and that year with Mr. Elder, I was like, you know what, I can't miss it. And so to be able to stand there, I remember I was standing next to Bubba. It was just an amazing experience. It was something that I think for him, that was kind of, one of those moments in his life that, you know, he wanted to do before he passed. Regardless if the Masters was going to allow him, or, you know, he wasn't going to ask for it. I would think, you know, it's something that for him to cherish everything that he's done for the game and for the African-American community, that was something that I think, you know, for him, that was kind of the icing on the cake. It was, you know, it people finally are showing him the respect that I think he deserved. Through all those hardships and times of him coming up in the sport. And again, for me, just to witness that, and again, for kind of my first time seeing the first tee shots at the Masters, that was definitely something special.
Cameron, after that Masters in 1975, Lee Elder said that he was nervous when he first started playing, and then he told himself the line, "Your life will not depend on how you play." And obviously Lee Elder's life did not depend on how he played that day. It might be the most impactful missed cut in the history of this game. But do you feel the weight of a statement like that in the sense of having to live up to the example set by a Lee Elder, a Charlie Sifford, as you work your way through your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm, as I've turned pro and kind of, you know, growing into my own person, kind of figuring out myself and what I want to do in this world, you know, besides golf. It's a very true statement. I think it's something that I'm trying to live up to every single day, and playing the same way. You know, if you have to play for yourself. You know, you can't go out and play for something else. You know, if you do that, things aren't gonna always go your way. So for me, it's, you know, looking at Lee and with that statement, it's, you know, playing for yourself and living by example and not, you know, whatever I shoot that day, it is what it is. It doesn't change the fact that I'm going home to my family and my wife, and they don't look at me any differently, or my best friends or the closest people around me don't look at me any differently. So, you know, golf is, it's just a game. It's obviously a avenue for a lot of opportunities in life, but at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't define you as a person. You know, I think other things off the course and the things you do for others define you as a person.
Cameron, as you've grown into a man and really kind of found your own voice, do you feel like you have some allies? Because this can be a burden at times to kind of carry the flag for a movement. Do you feel like you have people that are in your corner?
No, I do. I definitely do. You know, like I said, this is something that I feel like I'm very comfortable with. I think just growing up where I did and how my family had to get me through, you know, junior golf and all that to get me to even have a chance at a scholarship. You know, I feel like I've dealt with a lot more pressure, just in that sense. So for me, this honestly kind of feels like an honor, like you said, as far as, you know, making sure that, you know, I'm always doing it the proper way and being respectful, but also being, you know, outspoken and making sure that I'm doing the right things and that I'm speaking up at the right times.
Well, it's a tough Monday for a lot of people. Cameron, you are wise beyond your years, and we appreciate a few minutes. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday.
No, thank you all. I appreciate it.
And the golf world continues to react, including the 18-time major champion Jack Nicklaus. Lee Elder was a pioneer in so many ways. Yes, he was the first black golfer to play in the Masters, but that simply underlined the hard work Lee put in to further the cause of everyone who has a dream to play on the PGA Tour and thinks there were too many barriers before them. It was wonderful that the Masters and Augusta National paid a well-deserved tribute to Lee by inviting him to be an honorary starter on this last Masters. That morning, you could see the joy in Lee's face, and Gary Player and I were honored to enjoy that moment with him. Lee was a good player, but most important, a good man who was very well respected by countless people. The game of golf lost a hero in Lee Elder. Barbara and I send our heartfelt condolences to Lee's wife, Sharon, and their entire family. The PGA Tour has confirmed that Lee Elder has died at age 87. Elder, who broke the color barrier at the Masters in 1975, was a four-time winner on the PGA Tour. He was an honorary starter at the Masters for the first time in 2021. He won four times on the PGA Tour, but it was his fight against racism and bigotry that will be as remembered far more than his play. He was a champion of racial justice and a trailblazer at Augusta National when he became the first black man to participate in the Masters in 1975. Welcome back to Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week. We're celebrating this life and legacy. We've interviewed many people in and around the game. What's been your biggest takeaway this Monday?
The realization that we're talking about the rarest of golfers whose impact is not measured in trophies won or in prize money won. And that's certainly the legacy of Lee Elder here. He is as close as golf has ever produced to an Arthur Ashe figure, who is kind of unifying and trying to pull people together with a message against the discrimination and bigotry that has kind of stained the history of this game for a very long time.
His story mirrors many African-American stories from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. My own family's legacy of starting in the South, moving out west. He was orphaned as a 9-year-old, lost his father in World War II. His mother died shortly after. He kind of bounced around from different family members, ultimately ending up in the ghettos of Los Angeles. You know, didn't really start playing golf a full 18 holes until he was 16 years of age, and kind of rose through the back door of a game that's hard enough as it is to play, but when you can't get through the front door and you're cross-handed and you somehow find a way to compete in the Masters and win four times on the PGA Tour and eight times on PGA Tour champions, what does it say about the intestinal fortitude of this man?
And the fact that he carried himself with absolutely no bitterness at all. I mean, when he played the United Golf Association for black golfers in the early 60s, at one point he won 18 out of 21 events. That gives you a hint of what he was as a player and what he might have been able to achieve in those years where he wasn't actually able to get on the PGA Tour. I mean, he was 33, 34 years old when he made his debut. He was 40 years old when he played in that Masters in 1975. But there was no sense at all with Lee Elder that there was a missed opportunity in his career. His career had a tremendous amount of impact. Not a lot of trophies, but a lot of impact.
Yes, and it goes back to 1975 that many of you will remember. He broke the color barrier, the first African-American to compete in the Masters, missed the cut, but that didn't matter. It was more about the statement of him being on that tee. He, as Eamon mentioned, had to rent two houses that week. He was so afraid of the death threats that were coming his way, but he held his head high. His game was strong. And, of course, this spring he was honored to stand beside Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player to remember that moment back in the spring of 1975.
Lee Elder is the first black man to compete in the Masters. And in doing so, blazed a trail that will inspire the game of golf and future generations of players. Lee, it is my privilege to say you have the honors.
And what a moment it was in April. Lee, of course, not able to hit a tee shot because of his health, but you see the smile and the dignity that he held on that Thursday morning, and I was able to spend some time with Lee after that incredible moment on the first tee at Augusta National.
Lee, today you're an honorary starter at the 85th Masters.
alongside Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. What was the experience like for you this morning?
Oh, rewarding, very much so. To be able to tee off alongside two great icons and to have them say the wonderful thing that they said about me, I feel that I was blessed. I was blessed in the sense that I had a lot of help getting to that point and had a lot of people praying for me over the years, and I know that I will always share this for the rest of my life. My family and I talked about this. We've been able to sit and talk about it, and I know that they would cherish it as much as I do. And I'm just so happy that I was the person that the chairman selected for this great award, and I think that is something that I will like to have everybody enjoy these moments with me.
You have lived a singular American life. 50 years from now, 100 years from now, what would you like your legacy to be?
Well, I'd like for it to be that I made a difference in some way, regardless whether it was a small one or a large one. At least I made a difference. At least I accomplished the things that I wanted to accomplish, and that was helping people that was coming behind me. I felt that that was very important for me, and I think that was the reason why I stayed the course. I think if you don't do that, then your thoughts about helping other people and things that you would like to do would never come about. And that's why I feel so happy that I'm able to be in this position that I'm in today, and to receive a great honor like I received today is something that I just wish everyone could experience and really feel how happy I am. How happy I am, not because of the fact that I was here today, but the fact that I worked hard to get to this point. So now I can relax and enjoy it. And I want to thank the chairman so very much for selecting me and taking that step to put me in this position.
Lee, you've inspired so many people. Congratulations.
Thank you so very much. It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much. So good to see you. And thank you again.
It was a big week for Lee. He was exhausted that week. He had oxygen that he had to have on. You know, when we were doing that interview, he had the oxygen in and he took it out for the interview. Of course, that week he went to Payne College, where Augusta National had endowed scholarships in his name for the golf program there. It was just a highly emotional Thursday and week for him. And I got the sense that he kind of knew. He was able to exhale and even said that there. I'm able to kind of be at peace. And do you think that his legacy will continue to leave a stamp on this game, even as he has passed from this earth?
I think it will, because we talked earlier about the Lee Elder internship that's coming. His name is on a scholarship at Payne College, and this is a guy whose name is now attached to a pathway that he himself was denied as an orphaned child and trying to work his way through the society and certainly into this game. And I think this is honestly a guy who belongs. If Augusta National was to have a Mount Rushmore, Lee Elder has a place on it. Didn't matter that he never actually won the tournament at all. There's a reason why he was chosen for the role that he is. You know, Lee Elder was a pioneer, a trailblazer, and after that Masters in 1975, he was invited back by a member to play just as a guest. And in that group with him in 1975 was Fred Ridley, who was the then US amateur champion and who was the man who became chairman of Augusta National 4 years ago and made the decision to honour Lee Elder earlier this year. And I think that's an acknowledgement from Augusta National that its past wasn't necessarily always so noble on these issues, and that it was never too late to at least pay tribute to those who took a stand.
Yeah, and Lee in so many ways is the embodiment of the progress in golf because of the dignity that he carried and the sometimes burden that he carried. But I do think at the end of his life, he was able to kind of luxuriate in some of the honors that the game bestowed upon him. The 2019 Bob Jones Award from the USGA is, in some people's mind, the highest honor in the game. And there's a story that Lee told to Guy Yoakam of Golf Digest that he and his wife Sharon would carry that trophy around. It's a heavy trophy, and like Lee was kind of caught between, I want to show this trophy off, but it's so heavy, I don't want to damage it either. But I do think, especially the last few years of his life, with the honor at Augusta National, with the scholarships endowed in his name, with the Bob Jones Award, that he was able to recognize that all of his hard work, even with some pain along the way and with some discrimination along the way, had not been in vain.
No, and I think he left with the one realization I suppose you would all hope to leave with, is that you left this place a little better than you found it. Lee Elder certainly left the game of golf a lot better than he found it. It was a long, rough journey that he had with a lot of indignity foisted upon him along the way, but it didn't change the character of Lee Elder one iota.
In so many ways, it was life full circle on that Thursday morning this past April in Augusta National. Lee Elder, a smile on his face, spending some time with me and anyone who wanted to speak to him about the journey and legacy of a life well lived. Golf Today continues to celebrate the life and legacy of Lee Elder, who passed away Sunday at 87, a gentleman who stared down racism and bigotry with dignity and grace, despite death threats and slights, to forge a life in the game he loved. Some notable accomplishments: first black player to compete in the Masters in 1975, four-time winner on the PGA Tour, member of the 1979 U.S. Ryder Cup team, the first black player to qualify, eight-time winner on PGA Tour champions, four of those wins in his second season where he had 21 top 10 finishes, and of course an honorary starter at the 2021 Masters. The tennis great Billie Jean King with this on social media: in 1975, Lee Elder became the first black golfer to compete in the Masters tournament. He broke other color barriers as well. Trailblazer, an athlete, and a true gentleman. May he rest in peace as his legacy lives on. We now welcome in Wendell Haskins, founder of the original Tee Golf Classic. Wendell, it's good to see you even on a sad day. When you think of Lee Elder, what comes to mind first?
Oh, just a class act, and obviously a trailblazer, particularly in you know, black golf history. There's certain names that come to mind immediately when you think of people who made significant feats in golf and accomplishments, Charlie Sippard being one, and of course Lee Elder, the first black man to ever play in the Masters, just meant a pretty big deal in the black communities particularly.
Wendell, we've talked a lot about what Lee Elder stood against, but what actually needs to happen in golf to move Lee Elder's vision of inclusion forward?
Well, a number of things. I think, you know, there were some great things done, you know, post George Floyd, where, you know, Augusta recognized Lee Elder and included him in the ceremonial tee shot, and then subsequently supported, you know, black college golf, which I think needs to happen at a larger level. And we're seeing some of those things happen. And then also at the executive level, what I also continue to advocate for is seeing more black executives in the game of golf, decision makers, and people being included in the decision making at the decision making level in professional golf and the overall golf economy.
Wendell, how much has things evolved since the 1970s when Lee Elder broke the color barrier at the Masters? Where do you see the game of golf in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion today?
Well, I'm seeing a little bit more diversity and inclusion. The equity part, I think, is what we have to work on, was something we have to work on tremendously. We've obviously seen a phenom in Tiger Woods, who just, you know, made leaps and bounds in terms of African-American participation in the game of golf, and certainly inspired a number of people to be able to played the game at a high level. We're seeing a lot of people playing with the Advocates Tour and people breaking on the tour like Joseph Bramlett and Willie Mack, and we're following those kinds of people in the game. But once again, you know, I also think we need to see more people included in the boardrooms, at the board level, and at the executive level in golf, really to add to the thought leadership of the entire industry.
Wendell, as part of kind of redressing what had happened in the past, last year, Major League Baseball announced that it would treat the records and accomplishments of the Negro Leagues as part of the history of Major League Baseball. Is there an argument to be made that the same privilege should be extended to the United Golf Association?
Absolutely. I mean, the UGA was a legitimate competition ground for these players, and people like Lee Elder and Charlie Sifford and Yarrell Clark and a number of people, Teddy Rhodes, they were legends, you know. And the Negro Leagues has done the same thing with people like Satchel Paige and great players, you know, in their sport. And, you know, these were the only places that these gentlemen and these folks were allowed to play. And certainly it was significant. And, you know, just to be quite honest, Black players weren't the only players that participated in these events either. You know, there were white players and players of other ethnicities that played in the UGA in these events, because it was truly inclusive. Anyone was able to play in it as long as you entered and participated. And these players, competed with the best at times and beat some of the great white players of the day. They just weren't able to play on the PGA Tour and compete with them because of the Caucasian-only clause, but certainly their accomplishments were worthy.
Wendell, Lee Elder lived a remarkable life, but not necessarily an unfamiliar one to members of the Black community, especially of a certain vintage and certain age. How familiar are you with the story, his Black experience of growing up poor, segregated South, ends up in Los Angeles, carries this remarkable grace and dignity for his entire life?
Listen, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting both Lee Elder and Charlie Sifford and spend a great deal of time with them over the years that I'd known them, and very familiar with their stories. You know, Lee Elder came from humble beginnings in Texas, you know, one of several children, and picked up golf and was able to kind of hustle his way through the circuit and really went up the ranks to be able to play at the professional level. And he was an incredibly humble man. When you meet him, I would see Lee Elder. One, I honored him at my own original Tee Golf Classic in 2015. And that was a great experience. We got a chance to bond. He and his wife Sharon came up, and he had such a great time that he wanted to come the following year, which he did, and just enjoyed and socialized with everyone that was at the tournament, particularly the kids. He had an affinity and a love for children and really wanted to see people get into the game and have the opportunity to play golf from a younger age, which he probably didn't have the opportunity to do. And certainly people like Sifford and Elder, they didn't really break onto the PGA Tour until they were well into adulthood. So they had really lost some of their greater competitive years, you know, but still were able to make a life for themselves and compete. And, very familiar with this story and his accomplishment. It was an honor to be able to recognize him at the original Tee Golf Classic, like we do so many legends every year. And, I would see him at Anthony Anderson's tournament and all of the celebrity tournaments that he would attend. And he was always gracious and very humble. I ran into him again when he won the Bobby Jones. He was awarded the Bobby Jones Award, I should say, from the USGA. And he was tremendously proud of that accomplishment. And we had some great conversation in Las Vegas around that. And very familiar with his story. And, it was great to see him at least get these recognitions before he passed away. Oftentimes, we don't recognize these folks until, after they pass away, which is a terrible disservice to them, considering everything that they endured, the barriers that they broke down, and the things that they did to really advance the game of golf and to make it more diverse and inclusive, to let people know that a Black man loved this game just as much as everyone else and could play it at a very high level. And certainly we know he influenced people like Tiger Woods and all of the others that would come after him.
Wendell, he loved this game, as you mentioned, as you just said. I'd see him in the gallery at the Travelers. You'd bump into him at the gallery out in San Diego at the Farmers Insurance Open. You knew him personally, spent time with him. He was at your original Tee Golf Classic. What was your favorite thing about spending time with him? What was your favorite thing about the man?
He was just humble. He had a great personality. He had a great sense of humor. He was extremely humble, and he was just a pleasure to be around, you know. If you see, when he came to my tournament, we laid it out for him. All the flags and everything had his name on the flags. It was really the 40th anniversary of his playing in the Masters. So we honored him in 2015, and I had these ball markers that had his image on them, and it was like a personal coin. And he just looked at that thing, and it said, you know, 1975, Lee Elder, you know, honoree, you know, at the Original Tee Golf Classic. And he just thought that was just he was so humble and thought that that was just a great token of his accomplishment, that we would do this for him. And a couple of weeks afterwards, he was going to some other events, and he called me and he said, "Hey, man, I really like those coins that you did. You think I can get some more of those? How can I get some more of those coins?" And it was a pleasure for me to send him some more of those coins and to commemorate him in that way. I still have them, and everyone who attended the tournament that year cherishes those ball marker coins that we had done for him. And it was a great feeling for me to know that I touched him in such a way to be able to honor him.
I may have to grab you offline and see if you have any more of those coins for me in Amon, but that's another conversation for another day. Wendell, thank you so much for your time and sharing some stories on the great Lee Elder.
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys, and God bless.
And you. Much more reaction on this Monday to the man, Lee Elder, who passed away on Sunday at the age of 87. Fierce competitor, sweetheart of a man. Welcome back to Golf Today. In 1974, Lee Elder won the Monsanto Open in Pensacola, Florida. The victory opened a huge door for the young professional and for African-American golfers around the world. Here's a clip from the golf film's documentary, Uneven Fairways, narrated by Samuel L. Jackson.
In 1969, Charlie Sifford won the Los Angeles Open and thought that might mean a trip to Augusta, Georgia and the Masters. It did not. But 5 years later, a young man who had dominated the Black United Golfers Association won the Monsanto Open in Pensacola, Florida, and with that, carried the hopes of all African-American golfers onto the pristine fairways of Augusta National. That was Lee Elder, the first Black man to play in the Masters in 1975, thus breaking down a barrier, whether perceived or real.
Lee Elder won the Pensacola Open, and it was called the Monsanto Open at that time. And I happened to be there when he won the event. And I just remember my dad almost give me a second here, going into tears. It motivated me a lot.
And we now welcome in Renee Powell, the golf trailblazer. Renee, it's a hard day. What are the memories that come to mind when you think about Lee Elder?
Oh, gosh. You know, you're right. It's a very, very sad day. And I have so many memories of when I think about Lee, because I've known him for so long. We first met when I was just a teenager. I was 17, 18 years old and playing in the golf tournament and at Miami Springs Golf Course in Miami, Florida, and met Lee, and we played a practice round together and just became friends over all the years. I mean, we both went on I went on the LPGA Tour. He went on the PGA Tour in the same year in 1967. And just before that, a year before that, I think we both won the UGA National Tournament in Indianapolis at Kauffman Park. I won the women's division. He won the professional division. And we played in a JCPenney mixed team championship together. And actually just about a little over a week ago, he called me about a project that he wanted me to be involved with him in during the U.S. Open this coming year. And the last time I heard from him, and So when I started getting phone calls last night, it just it really bothered me, and I sadly found out that they were all true.
Renee, you mentioned that you went on the LPGA Tour the same time that Lee went on the PGA Tour, and the discrimination that's been well documented in Lee's case wasn't unique to the PGA Tour, because there were times where you were denied access to official tournament hotels or restaurants. What was it like as a black golfer to play professionally in that atmosphere back then?
It was difficult, you know, because golf is much more of a mental game than it is physical. I know, you know, there were many more black guys on the PGA Tour at the time, and Althea Gibson had played on the tour some. We weren't always there together because sometimes she wasn't playing, but it was challenging. And I ran into the same kind of difficulties that the guys did. The one thing that was different was that the atmosphere on the LPGA Tour, and the LPGA never had a Caucasian-only clause in it, which I was grateful for. And the players, many of the players I knew from playing junior golf or collegiate golf and amateur golf, but it wasn't so much the players that where I ran into difficulties. It was, you know, the outside. It was, to say, was hotels and restaurants and locker rooms and threat letters and things of that nature. And so my colleagues on the tour were always, you know, were supportive of the times. But it was difficult because there were difficult times in our country at the time.
Renee, in the face of those headwinds that you faced, that Lee Elder faced, the words that you described, Lee, are grace and dignity. Those are the same words used to describe Renee Powell. In that era especially, how were you able to carry yourself with such dignity? How was Lee able to carry himself with such dignity?
Well, you know, I think we both golf. We both knew the challenges that were there. We also knew that, you know, it was important that we try to put aside the things that were happening, the negative things, and really trying to put up positive bits of time. Because that's the only way that one can make a difference, you know, and one's best foot forward. And I think that's what we both did.
What did it mean to you, Renee, to watch Lee Elder hit that tee shot in 1975 when he broke the color barrier at the Masters?
Oh, my gosh. It was, you know, everybody knew it was history in the making. And it was moving, advancing things forward. And it was so important. And he fought hard to be there. And Charlie Siffert was denied the opportunity. But Lee finally, as rules changed, was able to be there. And so, you know, it's watching Lee do that. It was, I know, a big weight on his shoulder, but we were all so proud to see him standing on that first tee, taking the club back and following through and hitting the ball. You know, it was great.
Renee, all these years later, how encouraged are you, or discouraged, or you choose the word, about where golf sits in the era of 2021 in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Well, those are three terms that we use now. We've tried to, without even using those words, have tried to move things forward. You know, we still have a long ways to go. I've been in this game since my dad put a golf club in my hand when I was 3 years old. And we've had a lot of talk. We've done a lot of research, and we've had more talk and more research. Things are starting to move, finally, but they've moved slowly, but I think that we have people that understand a little bit better now. When people say, well, you have to wait. Well, you know, weight broke down the boat. So, you know, we still have a long ways to go, but things are moving in the right direction, I think, at last.
Renee, do you think Lee got his due in life for what he meant to this game and what he accomplished? And when you see all of these honours and nice words being put out there by every organisation in the game, is it backed up by enough action? or is there more action required?
Well, yeah, of course there's a lot more action required. And the thing is, it's what always makes me very sad is that people don't get their due until they're older to enjoy them, you know? And even though everybody has been fighting along the way, and, you know, and Lee, you know, even after he left the tour, continued to try to make things better, to open doors, to, you know, bring young people into the game, you know, to be a lightning rod to help to move things forward. So the sad thing is that things get left until people are walking down the 18th hole before things begin to happen sometimes.
Renee, when you think about Lee Elder, the player, someone who didn't play a full 18 holes until he was 16 years of age, who started cross-handed, who caddied, who didn't play in the Masters until he was 40, what did you appreciate about Lee Elder, the player, how he went about his craft?
Well, you know, because of the fact that he loved the game and wanted to do better all the time and worked hard at his game, I remember watching him. It was during the American Golf Classic, which was in Akron, Ohio, and I think it was in 1968. And he ended up in a tie with Jack Nicklaus. And I think he went, it was four or five extra holes before Jack became, ended up winning. But that was such a great breakthrough where people saw the, I think they saw the talent of Lee at the time, because Jack was like the great player at that time. So, a lot of times, you know, many people don't get the credit for what they did do it or how they achieved or what they achieved. And certainly Lee was such a super player. And to be able to play golf under adverse conditions all the time, I mean, if you put any one of the players that played on that tour and put them under the same kind of adverse conditions, how would they end up? How would they play? How would they do it all?
Well, Renee, I know you both traveled a very similar path in this game and in life. Thank you so much for your time on this Monday.
Well, thank you very much. And please make sure that I hope everybody prays and keeps his family and his wife, Sharon, in prayer and thoughts.
Yes, indeed. The great Renee Powell continuing to react to the passing of Lee Elder, trailblazer in this game that so many of us love.